Well, hello there, my beautiful souls. Yes, it's me, Sandy Joy Weston. I can't believe I've been podcasting for over 16 years, and my agent realized I keep forgetting to tell you something super important. Yes, besides being a podcast host and an author, I am also a keynote speaker. What? I bring big energy, powerful shifts, and inspiration to audiences all over. How could I not tell you this? So if you're planning something fabulous and you want your crowd to shine bright and have a blast, head over to my sandyjoyweston.com website and check out my speaker page. I would love for you to refer me, recommend me. I would love for you to be in my audience. So let's make some pure joy together. I really appreciate it. Toodles.
This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Hello, hello, my Let's Keep It Real people. I feel like it's been a beat. I was trying to think of the last time we connected. Because of the holidays, I took off for a while. But don't worry, we're coming back stronger than ever because I listened to you. I actually listened to you and the things you wanted to talk about and how you wanted me to present them. How about that? So you let me know how I did today. I got an easy guess though. I have Nate Green in the house, so he's going to make it really easy. But I want to hear all your thoughts like, yo, Weston, you know, you're in the right track, but, you know, not in the right seat. I'm all good. I love you guys. Nate, are you ready? We're changing things up. How do you like being the first for that?
Sandy, I love it. Let's go. Let's be a pioneer here.
They know me. I love first. It could be like, oh, the first time I saw a black squirrel, the first time I saw a purple paperclip. It doesn't matter. I love first. I love it.
Let's go. Let's create the path.
All right. So number one thing is just so you know, I just want to come out saying this. So my higher power force, I call Neil, right? So it's that's a whole nother story. So it's like me and Neil. And when I wrote your name down as Nate Green, I wrote Neil Green. Never did that before. Awesome. All hail. All right. Anyway, Nate Green, let me tell you a little bit about him. Nate Green is an award-winning entrepreneur, leadership coach, and best-selling author and proven track record of scaling businesses. I know you guys want that. You told me, including founding and selling a company for eight figures while earning a spot on the Inc. 5000 list. Just pause there. For four consecutive years, 2021 to 24. A former police officer turned CEO. I have a lot of questions. Nate channels his unique experiences and passion for growth into helping others achieve their greatest potential. His mastermind, Built Unstoppable, and his book, Suck Less, Do Better, Who Doesn't Want to Suck Less, provide actionable roadmaps for personal professional success. Beyond his business achievements, Neil, his devoted family man balances his drive for success with his commitment to his loved ones. He remains passionate about supporting others, constantly evolving, and building a legacy of impact and growth. All right, Neil. That was a joke. Okay, Nate.
Yes. Neil, we got Neil up top and Nate here. Okay, so we got the double
ends. He's all over.
Okay. That's it.
So, Nate, give me your word. One word that pops in your head that best describes your past 30 days and why you pick it.
Inspiration.
Inspiration.
Why do I pick that? Yes. Because it's the turn of the year. And so the turn of the year, I like to go with my own principle, suck less, do better. So how am I going to constantly move forward in 2025? And so I have to always dig deep and find that inspiration inside of myself on what are my words for this year? What is my focus for this year? What are these different pieces that I'm going to chase down my future with each and every day? What is going to be my hyper focus, my really driving forces in this new year?
So January comes about, Do you start thinking then, like it's January 1st, what you want to achieve and what you want to accomplish? Or are you thinking and building upon it in December?
It's actually before that. I start my planning in October.
Okay.
Yeah. So it starts in October, and then I have an end of the year closeout and fresh start process. And so that specific process is the last 2 weeks of the year into the first week of the new year. So there's a specific process. There's a list of questions that I ask myself. There's
in October.
That's all the way near the end. In October, I start setting goals for 2025, because if you're closing out 2024, you're thinking about all your goals that you set all the way back in 2023. But what if in October, you can get your mindset already triggering on your next year's goals? It's just a way to finish the year even stronger. And I've always overachieved all my prior year goals because now I have fresh lenses looking at where I can actually go. And next thing you know, I'm bulldozing through those last 3 months.
Okay. So let's say that's cool. I get it. I love it. But here they are and they didn't do that. So they got to play catch up, right? Because now they're starting fresh, which is okay, because they didn't think about it. So what are some ideas you could say to them? Okay, here we are. It's already January, man. Now what?
Yeah. And so that same closeout and fresh start process that I do, and this is something, if you have availability, provide PDFs for your listeners. I would love to send you over the PDF. That way you can provide it. But I have a specific process and I love it. It's a lot of reflective questions, a lot of process to really help people look at how they showed up at the prior year. What were their holdbacks? What was the lenses in which they looked at themselves? And what were the ways that it created noise or distractions? And then this new year, what are the things that need to change? What are the habits that need to change? What are the processes that need to change? And so it doesn't matter if it's the last 2 weeks of the year or if you're in the first 2 weeks. Obviously, perfect world. I love to do it at the end of the year, but it's never too late to close out and get your fresh start.
You could pretend a Chinese New Year.
it's never too late to have a catalyst point.
Right?
Yeah, it's never too late for the catalyst point. So let's create the catalyst point.
Oh my goodness. I don't know when the Chinese New Year is. I just...
No clue either.
All right.
I don't even know what year it is. Is it the year of the rabbit, the year of the squirrel? I have no clue.
Well, I hope it's the year of the squirrel. I love squirrels.
Okay. That would be awesome.
That was a whole nother thing. All right. So trying to stay on point here. We got a lot of questions about this, Nate. So you were a police officer. And
yes.
Then you switched to a CEO. They want more details. Like, let's get into the nitty gritty. What year?
Let's go into the tough
where,
parts. Yeah. Yeah. So when I was 18, I started in the police academy. And then I was hired as a cop when I was 19 years old. Through that process.
Whoa, gotcha.
I couldn't even buy my own bullets, but yet I was a police officer. My lieutenant had to buy my practice rounds for me.
Okay, wait a second. All right, I'm going to make sure I stay. I know I'm going to stay on point. So why did you want to become a police officer at 18?
So to go all the way back to what I call crack lenses, and this is all part of our childhood, our past, all these things that change the way that we see ourselves and maybe how we set the expectations of our future. I call them crack lenses. The theoretical term, or the actual term, is called cognitive biases. And so in there, my dad put a lot of pressure on us kids in our family on pensions and retirements. And so when I was growing up, it was trying to find a career that had a good pension system. And so I was also a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. So then the tying of those two together was the police force. You know, the firefighters, a lot of times they sit on couches a lot and they go through a little bit more of a lackadaisy type environment.
Not anymore. No, sorry.
not right now. Too soon. Inside the police academy, that kind of fed more towards that adrenaline junkie side, plus that expectation more from my father of getting like a pension or retirement system. And so that was kind of the perfect culmination, or at least so I thought at the time.
Okay. Now I got it. Very young. So then when did you stop being a police officer and why?
After about 3.5 years, I got into a car accident and I was paralyzed from the waist down for about 3 months. Wow. And so post that, then I had a heart failure at 23. And so then after you have a heart failure, they don't let you back on the job. And so I had to retire because of medical problems. And people are like, oh, at least you got a pension. Actually, it did not fit any of the requirements for a pension. And I got the boot on a Wednesday saying, hey, listen, you're done here, Green.
Okay. Well, that's a shock. And you
said it was
23
years old.
You still living at home?
No, I wasn't. I moved out like literally as soon as I turned 18.
Okay.
I've always been a very independent person. And, but you know, I will give you some great news. Like my dad always told me, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Always something that he put, hey, listen, like, great, you can create a plan, but always have a backup plan. And so while I was a cop, I went through this entire process of really learning who I was. And I went through discovery of, you know, career tests, personality tests, cognitive tests, anything I could figure out how I worked and like kind of unwind the insides of me. Then in that process with kind of discovering it, I was like, okay, if I'm going to be a cop for 20 years, I mean, I'm only going to be 39. So what am I going to do after that? And so I started putting together plans for after and post law enforcement. And so how could I build all these things and work through this process? So I started going to school for business and accountancy while I was a cop.
Okay.
So that was my backup plan.
You were a very driven, focused young man.
Very hungry, driven, focused, you name it. And it has not stopped.
Okay. So now you're 23. You're not a cop anymore. You're living on your own.
Yep.
No job, no pension.
And I refused to go on unemployment. I was so determined, and using systems was always like that last resort. I was like, you know what? It that's gonna be the last thing I do is use any type of welfare systems. I'm 23. I can do something. And so I worked through the process. I was just finishing up my bachelor's degree. And so I still had a little bit more school I had to do. So I started working on my master's degree right after that. But in that process, I went and found a sales job because I love people. And so if I'm not, you know, kicking people and taking them to jail, then I like enjoying conversations and impacting people. So it was like the two different sides of me. And so I went and actually I learned a lot through a sales job on really how to build that connection all the way through to closing, tie downs, all these different things. And I was very passionate about sales, mainly because I knew after this transition, I was going to be launching my own business. It was just a more matter of time before I started going, you know, down that complete pathway. But I also knew I had a lot to learn in the process.
So you were saying that a lot of these were instilled in you from your father.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people that tuned in here in the last month have said to me that they were very fortunate that they had those strong either mother figures or father figures, right? A young lady wrote into me before you came in, and I just was reading it, and I want to make sure we get in there, in that she didn't have that, right? She didn't have mm-hmm. a strong mother or father figure. And she said she feels as if she's repeating some of those same habits to her children, but yet she's 28. And she said, what asked Nate, is there any system that he is familiar with that I can undo what I learned not from my parents so that I can instill different values with my children? I try really hard, but I'm really, really struggling.
Okay, so we'll call her Sally Bell. Let's call her Sally Bell. So the great place about this is when you're working through it, it doesn't matter whether you did have strong parents or whether you didn't. We all are broken from it. And as much as like my dad was a killer dad, he gave me a lot of great wisdom, but he also gave me some holdbacks. And that's where I give you an example. When I went to go start my first business, I told my dad I was starting my first business. And my dad said, hey, Nate, I don't think you should do that. I think you should find a job that has a pension and retirement. Why? Because that was ingrained in him.
Yep.
And so these crack lenses for Sally or for me, it doesn't matter where you're at in your childhood, we're all going to have these cracked lenses. Why? Because our parents have cracked lenses or our environment has cracked lenses. I came in my household, my older brother was a tormentor. He was so rough. I mean, my entire life growing up, it was a brutal process and just, man, between physical beatings, you know, emotional, I mean, you name it, just beat me down day in, day out. And so we all have these brokenness inside of us. And so until you become more aware, and awareness is the key, you have to have self-awareness and really start to unwind it. But then you also have to have a guide in the process, somebody that's going to help you find these cracks in your lives, hold you accountable to the different cracks and maybe the different decision-makings. Because how easy would have been where if my dad told me not to start my first business, what if I let that crack lens guide my decision versus my planning and my process? That whole bio that you read about me wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And so it's so easy for these instillments, whether they're from great parents, whether they're from crappy parents, or whether they're from non-parents, these things, they're all there. How many parents that are amazing parents put all these expectations? Oh, you're going to go to this school, you're going to do this career, or you're not going to do this career. I mean, these cracked lenses, they go so deep. And whether you're Sally without parents, or whether you're Nate that had a great dad that was just really caring and wanted to see the best for me, or whether you're somebody that had other expectations that were put down because maybe their dad was an athlete and they're like, you're going to play baseball and you're just going to do it. I've seen that, and I've seen the destruction. I've seen the hatred between kids and their parents in every different environment, and walking people through. And that's actually, we deal with a lot of this stuff in the Built Unstoppable Mastermind, is we actually go through and we do testing, we do case studies with the participants, and we really walk through and help them diagnose and really get out of their own way and remap their future, not based upon all these cognitive biases or cracked lenses and something called automaticities, which is our automatic responses from these things from the past. And I could go nerd on this stuff all day long because I love it. But these things, it doesn't matter whether you're no parents, crappy parents, incredible parents, we are all broken from our parents because our parents are broken too. And it's all okay. You just need to know it, be aware of it, and understand how to overcome it. And my entire life has been overcoming these preconceived notions, these cognitive biases, and making decisions based upon the lighthouse that I'm setting rather than these thoughts and holdbacks that come in my head.
Well said, Nate. Well said. I think Sally's going to be really happy to hear that. And it's,
I get a little soapbox on these items. No. These things are, I'm so passionate about this.
No. It's good because I can feel it, you know, and you're living it. You're not just saying it, you know, it's part of how you live your life every day. And you just want to share 100%. With everyone. And it comes through. All right. So your brother.
Yes.
Where were your dad or your, I don't know if there was a mom or whatever involved when he was pummeling you.
So, you know, when you're dealing with an age gap, and there was an age gap, it wasn't tremendous. I think it was 4 years. But as we got older, you know, when somebody is like, say, 13, and they're watching, and there was a sister between us. And so if you're 13, you got an 11-year-old and you got a 9-year-old. Well, you know, when the 13-year-old is the tormentor and your 9-year-old's getting tormented, and then the 11-year-old's scared to death of the 13-year-old as well, nobody talks after the fact.
Really?
And I mean, what do you do? You tell your parents, and next thing you know, the 11-year-old, my sister, that's afraid of the 13-year-old, will side with the 13-year-old, which happened many times. I tried to say things, and it's 2-1. Guess what? Yeah. I lose. And I mean, there are situations like my older brother, you know, destroyed some stuff in my neighbor's house. And next thing you know, I had to take blame. And even though I tried to tell the truth, I got blamed for it because it was 2-1. And so like over and over again, just this, the tormenting, what was brutal. And to be honest with you, it actually took me years to kind of work through it post law enforcement, because my older brother was so focused on physical abilities. Everything was a physical challenge. I was in a competition I didn't even know I was involved in. It was crazy. And so it was like, you got to be bigger, stronger. Oh, you're too fat. You're too this, you're that. And next thing you know, like, I'm getting mocked all the time for my lack of physical abilities in comparison to him, because, you know, he's 4 inches taller than me. He's a big dude. He's strong and, you know, beastly. And so it was like, I was never big enough, strong enough, fast enough. Like, you know, I was competing with somebody 4 years older than me. And so then that gets ingrained here, cracked lenses.
Yeah.
And so all the way through law enforcement, I wanted to be the biggest, fastest, strongest, like you name it. I never wanted to have any physical limitations. Well, guess what? Knock, knock, God happens.
Yeah.
And I have heart failure. My physical limitations, I went from not being able to walk to not being able to walk four blocks without passing out. And so you go through this stuff and you get these crushing weights that happen in life. Now you have choices. And this is a concept that I absolutely love. I came up with when we were going through this mastermind. It's the concrete. Life difficulties, life challenges, and trauma and drama are all going to come. That's the concrete of life. You have three choices, Sandy. You can either be buried under the concrete and you'll be crushed by the concrete. You could be stuck in the concrete and make it drag it throughout the rest of your life. Or you can use that concrete as your launch pad. Your choice, three options. And that's in every single difficulty you ever face. Because you know what? I know because of what I went through between the stuff with my older brother, the heart failure, the paralysis, a nasty divorce where there was child abuse charges filed against my ex. All these different things that I've gone through, these are all launch pads for me to have a bigger impact in my life. I get to choose how I want to utilize these things and leverage these things. God gives us these opportunities to now leverage them for a bigger impact. And that's what it's all about.
I have the visual of the concrete and I can't get it out of my head now.
Yeah, I always imagine this big like concrete truck backing up and it just says like trauma on the side of it.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, you're kind of like standing out and you're like, wait a second. I either got to get in it. I got to be under it. Or I'm going to wait till it dries. And you know what? I'm going to learn from it. I'm going to grow from it. And I'm going to use this as a launch pad. And that's what every single piece of my life, I've had to make a defined decision, a choice to identify each piece of difficulties, hardships, you name it. I've been in 27 car accidents. I've been through hell and back physically. I mean, my spine probably looks like a 70-year-old's instead of a 40-year-old's. And so you look at all that stuff and you're like, wait a second. Every single thing can break you if you allow it to. You can get stuck in it, crushed by it, or you can use it and leverage it. And that's a cognitive decision that you have to make. And sometimes you have to make that decision every day. Sometimes you wake up and you're like, why me? And the answer is because you're the one that can leverage that to have an impact. You're the one that could choose to use it as a launch pad rather than being crushed by it. You're the one that was blessed with the opportunity to make a difference because of it. And that's the way I have to look at every single day. Anytime I get into this little licking my wounds because I had a tough time. No, that's not it. It's a launch pad. It's now a responsibility.
Okay. I have so many questions, but let's just go with the first one. What is your relationship now with your brother? I need to know.
I mean, like, it's okay. I mean, it's always a little distant. It's distant. I'm very good with boundaries, much better now with boundaries. Like, it's like, hey, listen, like, you know, if you're a negative source or if you're somebody that maybe has some past issues and, you know, he's come back and apologized in his older life. And he's definitely made a bunch of changes. So I don't want to be like, hey, listen, he's a jerk now. He's definitely made a lot of movements. He has a lot of realizations, but still, once again, you kind of keep people at a little bit of a distance. It's healthy boundaries. It's healthy for me. And that's it. And I choose to have those boundaries with specific people from my past. And that's a great place.
Yep. Perfect. Okay. Do you take the bus now?
Do I take the bus? You mean the one I got hit by 10 times?
27 car accidents. I'm like, why are you biking? Are you walking? Are you busing? Or are you still getting in a car?
Oh my gosh. I love cars. Cars, you know, the more cylinders, the better. And I'll be 27 car accidents, zero of them my fault. Zero. But you
exactly.
know, it just,
even more yeah. of the point.
You know what? I think it was a season where God was trying to get me to slow down. I think God was trying to get my attention or walk. Well, at that point, part of that time, I couldn't even walk. So, you know, but, you know, you walk through those seasons and, you know, now with my more mature vantage point, I'm like, all right, God was knocking on the door, trying to get my attention a little bit here and there.
You think? All right. So we're going to shift gears here and go with the business that you sold. What business did you start? Because you left with sales, want to be a great salesperson, graduating, starting a company. What was the company?
Yep. So it was all inside the financial spaces. I did all that work when I was a cop to figure out which businesses I could scale, build teams, and end up selling down the road. And so the first one was an accounting, tax, and financial preparation company. And so that was the first, that's the flagship. And that was the one that was sold, or one of the two that was sold, you know, the one you're talking about. And then I created ancillary companies, you know, a lending company, as well as a wealth management financial advisement company as the sister company. So it was a trifecta of the three.
But you don't do that anymore.
Nope. I burned the plows. And so that's a biblical term for like saying it's time to move to the next phase of my life. And so you sell them. And that was the thing is, you know, there was the major sale, the major exit on the one, which was incredible, great gift from God. And I thoroughly appreciate that. And then there was the other ones as well. And so, you know, I'm actually in the final stages of selling the last one, but it's time to, and when I felt God was telling me in 2023, the end of 2023, that he had more in different things for me. And in that process, you know, with God, there's always that step, the faith, that first action that he says, I got something else. And he gives you direction and then you start taking it. And that's where, remember, it was August of 2023. I came back from a trip and it was like God was just like right there, kind of beating me a little bit like, Nate, it's time to say goodbye to these last 16, 17 years. I got something different. And I was like, what? And I wasn't getting any clarity on the what, but God was just keeping me in that moment. It's time to say goodbye. It's time to say goodbye. And so within 2 months, I put the business on the market without a price. And we're like, hey, listen, let's see what the market will bring. And so then it turned out to be a massive exit. It was beautiful. It was awesome. And in that intro period, once I took that first step of faith of putting the business on the market, within, it was probably 30 days, I had a random call from a publisher. And like, I had never really put any thought of writing a book in the next 10, 15 years. Yeah. And this publisher was like, hey, listen, like, you know, we've heard about you and we were told to reach out to you because you have some great concepts and we'd be great at having a book. And I'm like, really?
That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. Did they tell you what? And so, you know, I'm like a note-taking guy. Like anytime I have concepts and things like that, I just place notes so I can kind of close that out of my mind and then I move on to the next. And so I had like a list of possible book ideas that maybe 10, 15 years down the road. And so then I met a few times with the publisher and I went through and I talked them through a series of three books. The first one is Suck Less, Do Better. And they're like, we love it. And they're all excited. And so that was... I actually agreed to write that one in, I think it was December, and I turned over the manuscript to them by March. And so it was awesome. I just felt like I'd never even written an article before this. It was crazy. It was like, I've never written anything, but yet the book was such a blast to write. And also so it was like very therapeutic. It was awesome. It was a great time.
Okay. So that's incredible. And I truly believe in that. Like, you know, here you were going along your way, not sure what to do. And boom, the publisher calls you. I could so see it. Who was the publisher?
Game Changer. Chris Colley. She's awesome.
Game Changer. Come on. Who doesn't love that? All right. But I'm having trouble here. So.
Okay.
It's so hard for me to wrap my head around even thinking suck less, do better. I mean, I think it's hysterical. And to me, when you say suck less, I don't know if that's the reaction you wanted, and do better, it makes me giddy. Like, I don't think negative, like suck less. But my brain is so not trained that way. It's like rewired. Yeah. Like if I have a negative thought that I suck, I'm like, you don't suck. You're just where you are right now. So you need to explain it more.
Yeah. So the whole term,
unless it's silly, then I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's funny enough. I've been saying the term suck less, do better for probably about 10 years or more. And it was like, it's this theme in my life because, so the first step about it is you got to cut out all the noise. Basically, the competition from other people, the distractions from other people, the comparison games, the envy, the jealousy, you got to cut that out. That's first step. Second, you have to look at yourself. What is the version of you that shows up today versus who are you going to allow to show up tomorrow? And so the theory of suck less, do better is constantly stepping one day at a time, taking all these micro incremental steps in your life to be better than you were the day before. And in that, you get closer and closer to the best displayed version, the best version of you that could ever be. It's not a derogatory term like you suck. It's more of like, hey, I don't want to live in my suck. I want to move forward to what I'm built for. And that's the entire concept.
I get it. And I could see it motivating, you know, I just want to suck less today, a little bit.
Yeah. Do better.
It can't happen. I bring a smile to my face.
It does to me too. Cause it's like some days when I'm having those days, I'll literally go in and look at the bathroom in the mirror and be like, dude, suck less, do better. Come on. It's time to go.
I can see that charging.
Forget everybody else. Yeah. Forget everybody else. Cut out the noise, cut out the distractions. You were competing against you yesterday. That's it. That's all you're doing today.
So some days I tell myself, come on, Weston, stop being a wingnut.
A wingnut,
because I'm like a squirrel. Oh, I want to do that. And I go in so many different directions and I go, come on, you can get it together. You know, stop being a wingnut. And that motivates me. So it's the same thing, right? That's it.
Don't be
a wingnut.
It's kind of whatever, like gets you going. And that's where, like in the book, the term suck less, do better, realistically, that's the final chapter. Because even though that's the title of the book, it's really helping people really understand how to become unstoppable, walking through the entire history of my career, the entire history of all the difficulties. Every chapter starts with a story of my life. And one of them, the chapter on The Lighthouse, starts with actually a dating story after I had a divorce, when I went back into the dating market at 34, and some interesting experiences. And one of them is a hilarious story. I'm not going to give it all away, but that is in the Lighthouse chapter. And it was a blast to write because I enjoyed it. But you know, I tell real life practical stories of like what happened to me and what I've been through, and then apply it back around to the principles at hand. And I loved writing the book. It was a blast. And that's actually, I've been in touch with the publisher and they want me to write three or four more. And so we're working on all the details there and what that's going to look like. And one of them, you know, that concrete concept.
Yeah. I love that.
I want to write a book called What Side of the Concrete? And it's all going to be based upon trauma, drama, past experiences, difficulties, and you get to choose how you find yourself on the other side of it.
Are you going to have the cover with the three different versions?
Maybe. I don't know. And maybe I'll get a picture of you stuck in it. You know, like,
okay.
Maybe you can be my model for it. You
know, oh, my. Awesome. No. Okay. I don't. Okay. So you'll have to look up the Lighthouse thing. How long did you date before you met? You're married again, right?
Yes. I'm married again. Yep.
Okay. Before you met your wife, how many years did you date? Don't even say you went on two dates.
3 years. So we got married. We got engaged after two, married after three. Yeah. So, but I dated for, I took a break from everything for like 9 months. And then I started dating. And man, my dating process, I went at it with formulas, process. Done it and grown in business. Oh my gosh. But you know what? It worked perfect. It was hilarious. I literally created systems and processes for dating. I had a three-date process, limits, where if there was red flags or orange flags, then I would have to say goodbye. I didn't follow that one time. And I almost got myself into a bad relationship where we were on our fifth or sixth date. And like, I literally was sitting across from this woman and there was like all these sparks flying, but I knew that if I went on one more date with this woman, I would never be able to say goodbye to her. She was a little crazy. And for some reason I was attracted to that little bit of crazy that she had, but I could just like see the next 20 years and all the like ridiculousness that would have came. And so, on that date, I went to the bathroom. I was like, I can't do this. And I walked back out and I gave her a kiss on the cheek and I said, I gotta go and I gotta go now. And this is the last time we're going to talk.
Okay. That's a whole nother podcast, but let's
Yeah, the dating process is a blast.
Dating, but hold on. So I just want to get this straight. You and your wife now, you dated for 2 years and got engaged, and then you were engaged for a year. Excuse me, and got married.
Yep.
Not that it's the same, but I got divorced at 35 and dated for 4 or 5 years, met my husband, got engaged in 2 years, and married the next year. So 3 years, same thing.
Yeah.
I didn't have a system. I didn't know I had a system. I did have fun. I met a lot of great people, but I probably would have been better if I had some kind of system. Although innately, I did kind of the same thing. I'd go in, go out, have some soup, and I'd say, "Yeah, I think I have to go now."
My thing in the dating process was, how fast could I get rid of them? That was kind of my thing, is like, how fast could I eliminate them from a potential? And so every opportunity that came up, then I would weigh them against a bar of what I needed and what worked for me. And then also a bar against things that were just going to never work. And then they would fit into different categories. And so very quickly, they would either get moved down the block or they would get removed from the block. And then it was a very systematic approach. And obviously then there were some girls that were they met all the criteria. There just wasn't the spark. And so you had to remove them too.
Is that going to be another book?
No. I you do not want me to give people dating advice.
Now
we've been married for 2 years and 2 months.
You're in the honeymoon stage. Okay. Oh my goodness, Nate, I had no idea. So it seems to me that the way your brain automatically processes, you're already going through systems of how things work and then planning it out. And then breaking it down, it just automatically goes there. Whether it's dating, business, doesn't matter.
100%. Well, even some the same things. We talk about cracked lenses, and we're talking about like awareness. So even where we were up at my parents' house over Thanksgiving, and there's a situation that my son found himself in. It was hilarious. It was great. It was good growth for him. But then my mom, who is a therapist, love my mom to death. She made two comments that were kind of like restrictive, like, "Hey, that's so out of character for you, Caleb." Caleb's my son. And I basically, the gear wheels, I basically start grabbing all these gear wheels on like what that potentially could create a cracked lens in my son. And I stopped her. I said, "Hey, mom, listen, like you need to stop that. You need to take that back. This is growth in his character. This is not out of character." And so correcting those statements, even those small statements, that's why certain people stay stuck in these situations, because anytime they go a little bit out, they get these limiting beliefs from the outside, these cracked lenses, and they get put back in their box. Then they don't find themselves with growth and development. So yeah, my brain works with, okay, what could this statement, what could this opportunity, what could this concept end up turning out within the big picture, and all the gear wheels that could link together. And like, I constantly see that forward process of what it could look like. And then I identify good, bad, ugly, risk factors, analysis. And then it's just like, okay, let's go or let's not go, you know, like that's, and then what corrective measures do I need to take?
Okay. How old's your son?
He is 13.
Because if you told me two, I was like, wait a minute, where are we going with this?
No, he's 13. So you know, he's at that point where it's a very pivotal stage in his development. And so, you know, being aware of these statements and concepts that could be talked to a 13-year-old can really kind of change the way of the next few years. And so I want him to find his own. And what he did was on his own is a great step outside of his comfort zone. And man, I love it. Encourage it. Like that's awesome.
Yeah. So what did your mom say when you said that?
My mom... She paused because she was like, "Did I just get corrected about like psychology?" And then she kind of looked at me. She's like, "Well, that wasn't what I was trying to say." Yeah. And I'm like, I know, mom. Like, I just want to make sure that we encourage the process versus discourage it by saying, "Hey, that's out of the box you're supposed to live in." And she didn't say it like that. She said, "That's out of character," which means you're defining what his character would look like in your expectations versus his character in what he is showing up, growing up, and becoming.
You must have had a fun household. Mom's a therapist. Wait, what was that?
My dad was in the school system. Like, he had this passion for helping low-income households, troubled kids, because he was a troubled kid. He was actually a high school dropout, and now he has two doctorates. Like, this guy went from one extreme to the other. And you say, hey, listen, I'm hungry and driven, motivated. Yes, because I got to see it firsthand. I got to see it. But in the same sense, there's four of us kids, but we all turned out so different in the same upbringing. The same thing.
I love seeing
crazy. Yeah. You know, give you an example, like, my parents expressed to us the importance of college education. Well, out of four kids, I'm the only one that has any degrees. And it's crazy, because you're like, well, our parents stressed the importance of it. And so I prioritized it. I have a bachelor's and a master's degree. Now, I mean, I never want to go back to school again, but I felt the importance of it. And I think of education as like the keys, you know, the keys that unlock certain doors. And that's what they became in my life, is that became the keys that unlocked the doors for these certain industries that allow me to build and scale and grow teams and go to the point where I could sell for eight figures. Those were the keys that opened up the doors. And so, like, why would I ever want somebody to tell me no just because I didn't work hard enough earlier in my life?
Too logical for me. Okay. Right.
Sandy, a lot of times people are feelings people, and I'm a very feelings oriented person. Again.
Too. Wait, I love the way you said that. Sometimes people are like feelings.
they're feelings oriented, and I am, but I live by a principle of focus over feelings. Because if we live by our feelings, how many times when my alarm clock goes off at 4:30 in the morning do I feel like staying in bed? Let's be real. And so I have to rely on my focus over my feelings. And that is true in so many different circumstances. But most of the time, people don't have their focus dialed in. They're missing their lighthouse. They're missing their goals. They're missing all these pieces on what their focus should look like. And so people come to me in one-on-one coaching and group coaching. They're like, hey, Nate, like, how do I create, you know, a process for moving forward? Okay, well, what are you moving forward to? What is your focus? What are you really chasing after? If you don't have a goal, if you have nothing that you're chasing after, well, nothing's going to work. You got to really ignite that driving force towards something greater. Suck less, do better than where you're at now. You got to go beyond, and you really got to chase down something that is massive, and it's got to be stupid big. And what looks stupid big right now in your life, 10 years from now, is not going to look as big. The goals that I set out when I was 23 or 24 starting this first business, my goals was just to make six figures. That looked so big, being a cop at the time I was making like $37,000 a year. So six figures looked like a huge step. Then my next goal was to be able to sell a business for $1 million. Then my next goal was bigger. And then my next goal was bigger. And then my greatest goal was then, okay, listen, during this season, I'm going to sell a business for eight figures. That became my goal. And I achieved that goal. And now my goal is to have an impact in 1 million people or more's life. That's my goal. Between my next 40 years is I want millions of people on my impact list. I want to change people's lives, and I want to help them find a better future, find their lighthouse, these goals that they're chasing after, and then figure out who they are and what they're really built for. That's what juices me up. Giving people hope by connecting them to their purpose.
I think you're lacking passion. That's my problem.
I have no passion, Sandy. I am like a turd on the log.
You really are not convinced. Almost. All right. Listen, I wrote this down, and it's a future conversation. We touched on it a little bit, but it's a whole nother podcast, and we're running out of time. And that is because it's been a big topic with a lot of my peeps, which is feelings versus focus. And, you know, having the drive and the dedication versus I feel like getting out of bed. And I have a whole different concept on that, but we're going to table that. All right.
Cool. Sounds good.
I want to make sure that I close out. Well, no, I got to just say this, and I'm pondering it. For me, you know, my head, I got my thoughts. Here my thoughts are. My body is what I got, my feelings. And I can't separate them. You know, the body, mind, and spirit, I can't separate them out. And so my vision, my intention, my purpose is so big for what I want to accomplish, whether it's in business, personal, or my body, that it drives me on the days I don't want to get out of bed. So it is a feeling, but it's because on that day when I go, oh, I feel like a poopy head, I have such a big thing that I'm going after that it does make me feel, you know, like I want to get out of bed. But what came first, the chicken or the egg? That we'll go, we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the last thing before we go, which is the future you is waiting on the current you, and that it's required, which we're touching on, required to take action. And what you tell yourself every day, remind yourself of that.
Yeah. So give you an idea. Back when I was a cop, you know, I was running the streets, running and gunning, cracking skulls, taking people to jail. Obviously, only people that deserved it. Use of force, appropriate. I'm just joking. But in that process, you know, when you're running and gunning like that, the last thing you want to do is go to school. Talk about a slowdown and a dud. But this is what I set in place is I can get through the next 6 years one way or the other. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to get through 6 years. But at the end of 6 years, I can either get to the end of 6 years with a master's degree, a bachelor's and a master's degree, or I'm going to get to the end of 6 years without it. Easy. So the future me relies upon the current me to have the right principles, process, and focus to be able to put the steps in day after day after day, that intentional focus on an ongoing basis to be driven towards a greater goal. And that future me, just like me right now, I get to work. I don't got to work anymore. I love it. I'm passionate about this. But this future me relied on the 23, 24-year-old version of me to make the right decisions. And at the end, now at 40, I get to have an impact. I can go smoke cigars on the beach all day long, but I choose to be on podcasts, write books, and chase after it. So yes, this future version of me right now, if the prior version of me didn't make the decisions, have the principles, walk through the process properly, and have the right focus, I would have never got here.
And I'm glad you did, Nate. I'm so glad you did.
I am as well.
All right. Well, we have to go. We have to wrap
up.
I'm so sad.
A 2-hour podcast is not acceptable?
Well, not today. I can't today. But I got a lot of time to go to the ladies' room. But I really appreciate you being on. I really do.
No, this is
awesome. And I'm so happy you are doing this in the world. And I really do believe you will touch millions with your message. I love having somebody on like you who's eat, breathing, and living it. And you can tell. You can tell. You know? You're not just spouting it out. This is everything and why it means to you. And I can say that you really thought it through inside it. For sure. Wait, Sandy, what did you say? I don't know. Let's go back. I love being around people like you. It's so different than my thought process that I love it. I love it, love it, love it. But before we go, we got to find out how to find you every which way, sideways, like how they can look it up.
Super stalker style.
Yeah, yeah. Every program. How do you want them to reach out, Nate?
So the easiest thing is my successwithnategreen.com. That is my website. Okay. But then you can also always harass me on Instagram. I am Nate Green. Very simple.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, that's it. So successwithnategreen.com. That's the easiest way to learn more about our programs and the book and everything else all through there.
The book's
and
there then, too. Okay.
Yep, 100%.
Okay, my let's keep it real people. What do you think? You kept it real? Do you want to share it, like it? Of course you do. Of course you do. You know somebody that will benefit from this and we would really appreciate it. I love you guys. I really do. Thanks for all your support. You mean the world to me. And until next time, you know what I'm going to say. Toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.